Well, now that I've blossomed my career, it's been an anti-fraud focus that I've had.
Chelsea, thank you so much for coming this morning.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No, most definitely. Most definitely. Where were you born? Where were you born?
I was born in New Jersey.
In New Jersey?
Yes.
And did you grow up there?
I did.
Okay. I did. All right. Now, let's take this for a quick turn real quick. Now, you've been in Japan for how long?
Since June.
Since June. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this country?
It's an amazing place.
Okay, don't give me all the niceties. Just tell me, I mean, like, what are the top three things you think about? If you were to tell someone, let's say I came here, and I said, Chelsea, you've been here since June. Mm-hmm. What are three things that impressed you right away? And I'm new because I've never been here.
Yes, yes. I would have to say first the cleanliness, okay, for certain, being such a large city. And I think that's partially due to the fact that there are no garbage cans. Which is...
They are, but they won't put them out for you to use.
Well, at least I haven't seen any yet. And at first, it's a little strange because you're always carrying your own garbage, and that can be an inconvenience, of course, but it's well worth it, I see, because of the effect that it has on the environment. Everyone keeps their belongings to themselves and disposes of them properly. And because it's not always intentional, right? Sometimes when you have trash cans in large cities, people tend to maybe inadvertently miss the can.
They threw in that direction.
I don't want to say it's always intentional, but okay. And so that contributes to it, I think. And so even though it is inconvenient, I think it's a great policy, and it does,
lead to
cleanliness. Yes.
It's clean.
Another thing is safety.
In what way?
I have noticed a huge difference in my personal sense of safety, from criminal justice perspective, of course, because I'm always thinking that way.
You are a lawyer, right?
I have a PhD.
So you're a professor and you're a professor?
I am.
Right?
Yes. Right? Yes.
And I've seen a few of your interviews you've had on TV stations in the U.S.
Yes.
It's hard to believe that. I mean, it wasn't hard to believe because when I first met you, because you seem to be so cheerful and non-assuming. Mm. You know, because you have good eye contact. That's one thing. You're not hiding anything. You're just looking right through me, which is very interesting. But then when I saw your interviews, I said, well, this young lady's really doing it. She's rocking the house.
Thank you.
So anyways.
I have amazing support. I have amazing family, friends, students.
Okay.
I'm with an amazing university, and so I have a lot of support. And
do you come from a big family?
Fairly. I have three brothers and sisters.
And where are you ranked in there?
So I'm the oldest.
So you're leading the way. You're thinking about them looking at this now,
I'm
right?
Leading the way.
I'm gonna show them how you give an interview. I'm gonna show how you can do a podcast. Do you ever think that in your mind sometimes?
No, I don't. I guess it's because I'm just used to doing these things and very comfortable with it.
And you learn not to move around so much. So you're the oldest. What's the age between you and the youngest?
So between me and the youngest, let's see, quite a while.
Oh, they really spaced you?
Quite a while. Okay. Well, yes. Well, it's two different.
Oh, so it's not the same parents?
Two different mothers.
Oh, two different mothers.
So there was a time difference. Yeah. I don't dwell on time periods.
Same here.
And I think that's served me well over the years. And I'll give you an example of that. I found that when I was deciding to get my PhD, and people said, oh, that's going to take a long time. But my thought on that was, well, the time's going to go by anyway, and I'd rather have used it in this way and continued my learning and earned this achievement during that time than have it go by. And that was always my response to that. However, in recent years, I realized it's also because I have a lot of energy.
Okay, right.
Right? So some people can't imagine doing those things because they don't maybe have the energy for it as well. It's not just the fact that the time does exist, right? Mm-hmm. That they also don't have the energy for that, perhaps. But for me, that was never in my thought process because I've always had that. So it was really just a matter of...
From a little girl all the way up. So we're going to get back to Japan too because you said that was one thing, cleanliness. Then after cleanliness?
We had let's see, cleanliness,
safety. And you say safe. What do you mean by safety? Give me some instances that you think.
I think just an overall feeling of personal safety, and maybe part of that is due to, in part, to the cleanliness, that you just don't, you feel as though everything is in order, and that makes you feel a little more comforted.
Right.
At least that's my personal perception. And
if you're in the States, what would you fear when you get in? You've been in crowds here, right? When you first got in crowds, did you feel a little tense?
Yes. Well, yes.
Okay, what do you think would happen?
I do think...
Or could happen.
I do think when you have a large amount of people, because there's always possibilities for something to happen. You know, there's certainly cases of people being trampled or things like that, or just inadvertently you getting hurt, right, because there is such a large volume of people. Mm-hmm. And so there's always, but there's also safety in numbers, right? And so you do feel more comforted when there's more people around. So right. There is a bit of give and take there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. But I think I was used to a lot of people around coming from New York City, coming from a large city, that it didn't surprise me as much. And I think it was helpful that, again, the society is a little bit more orderly. So for instance, when you have those large crowds on the subway, you have someone there, or the equivalent here, the train, you have someone here organizing that effort. Mm-hmm. And that makes you feel a little bit better about it.
Okay.
Than just sort of every person for themselves trying to, am I going to make it to work or not?
Right.
So I think that does help, even though you do have those same crowds, it's a little more controlled. And another example of that is I went to the Bruno Mars concert recently at the Tokyo Dome.
I was supposed to go and couldn't make it, yeah.
And that was an example of large crowds.
Right.
But there were so many people controlling those crowds, telling everyone which way to go, escorting people, if you will, to the proper area. And I'm not saying that that doesn't happen in the U.S. or in New York, but not in the same way, not in the same organized way. Mm. And so again, even though you have these crowds, you do feel this measure of control, and I think that gives you the perception that you're safer and everything. You have someone right there to reach
if you
had a problem.
Right.
Yes. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Okay, what would be number three? The third thing you tell me, because I'm just visiting, I'm going to see the place. What else would you tell me?
The food.
What about the food?
Well, the food here is amazing. It's the type of cuisine that I like.
What is that? Because Japan, so how do you see it?
Well, lots of fish and rice and vegetables. Okay. That's the way that I would normally eat. Mm. And here it's more plentiful and more accessible. And that's amazing. And at a better cost value. And
do you think it tastes the same?
I think it tastes a little bit better, I'd have
do
to say.
So?
Yes, the preparation.
Have you been back since you've been here?
I have not.
You have not yet?
I'm going soon.
I tell people usually you go through culture shock. It's not when you come here. It's when you go back to wherever you came from and realize what you learned to put up with.
Mm.
That's the culture shock you after coming particularly to Japan.
Mm.
I don't know about the other Asian countries, but I've been to the other Asian countries, and I was always happy to come back here after I went there, too.
Well, I went to Korea recently.
Okay.
So I do have that experience as well. So then I'll be coming home. Back home soon after having those two experiences between being here in Korea. Mm. And so I'll have those perspectives with me.
What was that like for you?
I really enjoyed Korea. It's a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge for me was there are this, at least from my experience, I noticed there was a few less of the signage was in English.
Mm.
So it was a little more challenging. And some of the traditional apps that I'm used to using to navigate around were not
operational there.
Okay. So it was just a little bit of a learning curve that way. But that was my only, the only negative aspect, I would say. Mm. Otherwise, I
were the people the same way? The people the same? You thought they were the same?
I think
so. So you have children as well, right?
I do.
How many kids do you have?
I do. I have two.
How old are they?
They are 5 and 2.
And what are they, girl, boy?
The 5-year-old is a girl.
Okay.
And the 2-year-old is a boy.
You have a book?
Yes, I have a few. But two are in the investigative genre, the art of investigation, and I have the art of investigation revisited. And in the art of investigation revisited, which is the most recent one, I wrote a chapter on energy in investigations. and the importance of that, and some case studies of where I used my energy in a positive way in my investigations.
Okay.
And yes, and so in that chapter, I talk about how when I was growing up, my grandmother always wanted to watch what we'll call police shows.
Okay, right, okay.
Because that's what she called them. And now, since then, there's been such a proliferation of the CSIs of the world. But at the time, there were just a few couple little shows.
Name yeah. some, do you remember them?
Like Starsky and Hutch.
Or wait, wait.
This is probably dating me. You know, just a few, Hawaii Five-O.
I missed all that. I was in the service.
A few of these little shows. Okay.
Right, right.
So she'd say,
what about Columbo?
Columbo?
Would that be the same?
Maybe that was a little. That was
maybe
before,
before
a little before,
before
this.
Yeah.
So she would say, "Let's watch these shows," and so I think that got me interested. And now looking back on it, gave me the impression that obviously she was also interested in the field because those are more unusual shows for her to gravitate towards. Now, I mean, again, it seemed normal to me at the time, but I'm looking back, like, oh, maybe she always had an interest in this type of. Of work too.
Is she still with us, or she's not?
She's
with
not.
Us?
No, okay. She's not. But this was a, you know, a strong impression that I had as a child, and then from there on, I was always interested in the field. And then when I saw a college brochure and I saw that that was a major, I said, I can actually study this. I didn't, you know, I was so fascinated by that, and I said, this is definitely what I'm doing, and I've been. I went the whole way.
And what,
so.
What age was that?
So I started with community college.
No, no. I'm saying what age was it when you said when you found out that you could really study this?
Yeah. So it was when I was in high school.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I took a class in criminology. They had one of those kind of. It was like an extra kind of special class, and I really, really enjoyed it. And from then on, I was interested, and I was looking at college brochures. And I saw the community, local community college had a criminal justice associate's degree. And I said, oh, I'm doing that, I'm doing that.
Now tell me this, Chelsea, when you say you enjoy it, what brings you joy? What part of it brings you the joy?
Yes, yes. Well, now that I've blossomed my career, it's been an anti-fraud focus that I've had. And I feel as though I'm really bringing awareness to the community about issues that are important. And hopefully saving someone from having something bad happen to them. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. And now, of course, that I train students to do this too and get them interested in the field, get them interested in the cyber aspect of it, where there's so many career opportunities for them and, you know, very lucrative ones at that, and just such a time of opportunity. And I enjoy being able to communicate that to students as well. Mm. So that's been a big platform of mine. And then also alongside of that is the investigations piece. I have an expertise in that and have developed it over the years. And it's something that I feel is important to bring to that next generation. So how to effectively conduct research, basically. Mm-hmm. And all the sources that you need to look at in order to get the information that you want, which applies to, I say in my book, almost any industry, really, because I'll say in a talk, you know, how many people do investigations? And sometimes very few people think that they do. But then when I start talking about, you know, from more of a research perspective, people realize, oh, I'm actually
investigating.
I'm actually doing this every day, and I just didn't think of it in that way.
In that way, right.
Right? Because they think investigations is just law enforcement or something.
It's bad against evil, yeah.
No, that's
it's accounting.
Not.
It's accounting. That's an investigation, too.
Exactly. There's forensic accounting. So
right, exactly.
So many fields have this aspect to it where you need to find information, and where do you look? And it's difficult today because there's so many. I mean, it's better in some ways because there are so many sources,
right.
But then it's also confusing and can add to, you know, difficulty.
Because some people try to dilute what you're really doing.
Yes.
They don't want you to investigate.
Right.
So they'll have reasons to try to sway you another direction. You didn't see what you saw. It could be in accounting, for example. I'm thinking of that.
Right.
So you've done some accounting, you found out these numbers don't match.
Right.
It's not coming out to the right amount. We'll forget about that.
Right.
For now.
So here's where some of this may come into play in a case like that, right? So maybe you're doing some standard accounting, and then you just think, oh, I wonder what this entity is. Oh, I never quite heard of ABC, right, shipping. Right. Right. Let me take a look at that, right? And then that's how it starts. Because you could look up ABC shipping and it's a completely legitimate company.
Right.
Or you just start Googling around and take it further, start looking for corporate records, and you say, well, that's unusual because there's a lot of invoices here to this entity and I can't find it anywhere. And so this is the type of exercise that I'm talking about. In a case like the ABC shipping, for instance, it's an opportunity there where you're saving someone, right? You're saving a business from fraud and crime. When businesses have this happening, they might shut down if it gets severe enough and people lose jobs. You know, there are serious repercussions these things happening. It's not just about catching a bad person.
That's right.
It's about saving a business and saving people's jobs and saving, I mean, there are 401ks, right? I mean, there's so many things to think about comprehensively that happen. Then when you have business insurances that need to kick in, then that raises all of our premiums. So it touches all of us in some way.
Do you have more? Well, now that society's changing, particularly the Western societies with gender and everything, when you started, did you see more, was it more male-dominated or female-dominated?
Oh, it was definitely more male-dominated.
What about now?
When I was going to some of my first classes in college, there were times when I was the only girl
in the
class.
That's what I would think, yes.
Yes.
But
or one of two, let's say, or something. You know, very few.
Right.
And that's changed a lot now.
Has it?
See with my own classes.
So what is it? Is it 50-50 yet?
I wouldn't say exactly, but there's definitely a lot more females taking the classes than when I was taking them.
And are they speaking up?
Oh, absolutely.
I think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you could have had, and even in the past, if they came there, they wouldn't say too much.
Well, I try to foster that in the classroom.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's important for everyone to have an opportunity to speak. And you don't want to make anyone uncomfortable that doesn't want to, of course. But I try to get everyone involved as best as I can.
Can you speak about, let's say, for example, in maybe an abstract way, the most interesting case up to date that you've dealt with, that you really, or the one that you really enjoyed, that really had you up and made you feel the adrenaline flow?
An investigation type case?
Or whatever you enjoy and do what you do.
Yes. Let's see. Oh, there was one case where, again, I felt like I did some really good work and helped a lot of people, which was very rewarding. But it was a case where there was an individual who had volunteered to be in an accounting role for a religious organization. And they were so excited about this person, meaning the other members of the board of this religious organization, they were so excited. They thought he was a perfect candidate and they really needed someone to fill this role. And they said, you know, we just want you to take a look because we have to. You know, we have to check the box, right?
But we did this. We did our due
diligence.
We
think everything's fine, you know, but just if you could take a look. And so, again, but you don't, as an investigator, you don't let those comments alter your investigation, but you keep that in your mind. You think, okay, and it gives you some, you know, helpful information, but you always have to remain neutral because you just don't know what you will find. And in that case, unfortunately, I found that he had committed an accounting-related crime at another religious institution just prior and had served time for that, so in the system. And so this was a risk that they would have been taking on to take on this individual in that role since he had committed this crime in the past. And they were very surprised to learn that.
So he was smooth.
He had this background.
He was smooth. Okay.
Very. And he was trying, clearly, to do it again.
Oh,
perhaps.
He was? Oh, perhaps. Well, the thing is, he's already got caught with his hand in the cookie jar once. So
it just makes it more likely.
Right.
That this might.
Why would he go in the same field happen. Or the same thing? Right.
Yeah.
Same position.
It was a little concerning.
Yeah.
So sometimes you do have to deliver that news that someone doesn't want to hear, and that can be difficult. But you know, at the end of the day, that perhaps you've helped that organization. You know, help save them some from something potentially bad happening.
Being involved in this field and dealing with, I'm sure, hundreds of cases. Okay, at least reading about them, several cases. Has that changed the way you look at people, or had you already always looked at people in a certain way and it didn't change much, or does it?
I'd be lying if you didn't look at people a little more skeptically.
Okay.
If I didn't admit to that, I'd be lying.
Can you see their eyes shake a little bit? Or what was it?
I think, well, and I hate to say it this way, but you know, let's just put it this way. You don't want to assume everyone is not telling you the truth. Right, you want to assume that people are good, and I do honestly feel that way. I'm a very positive person, and I really do feel that way.
But you know they don't.
But I am a little more, I am more skeptical, I would say, than the average person, just because I don't really, oftentimes, I don't put a lot of faith in what people say. I put more faith in actions. And so if the words match the actions, maybe that makes you a little more comfortable. But if they don't, then
But you're always looking at expressions and gestures, aren't you, as well? Body movements, expressions, how they
Come out. A little bit. I mean, there are some people that really specialize in that.
Oh, they're really good with that, right?
Right, that really specialize in that. But no, I don't. I think sometimes, because I've read about certain mannerisms or certain things that you do that are supposed to make you be guilty. And I do those things.
Okay, right. But I think everyone does. No, I think, but don't you think?
And so I think I'm not guilty, but I do those things, you know? Because people think right. about me. So.
One that I think about all the time, one of the gestures, is they say you're closed when you cross your arms like this.
Yes.
I do it because I'm comfortable. I don't, it doesn't stop right. me from feeling, but I have to go like this because I know if they're thinking, if they know what I know, doing this states for the normal person that doesn't know anything about body postures and stuff, that they're pretty closed. They're not going to, they're guarded.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But that doesn't mean that all the time.
No. And another thing is, let's say, personal gestures. So they say if you're telling a lie or about to tell a lie, you'll maybe do some kind of personal grooming maybe because you're nervous and it makes you feel more comfortable.
So
you're about to tell a lie. But you see, I just went like this before and I wasn't telling a lie. I just honestly wanted to fix my hair.
So, Chelsea, have you been through psychology classes too as a result of getting your degree? Did you have to do that as well? Was that part of it?
Yes, that's part of the training. Yes, I have taken some of those. It's very interesting.
But they don't talk about something that none of us tend to talk about. We know if we go up to a horse and we're nervous, or let's say we're excited, the horse will respond, right?
True.
Right? It's feeling our vibration. We all have a vibration. We know that through physics and everything else. Even this chair vibrates. You know, the atoms are going through it. We sense that through each other, but some of us don't pay a lot of attention or put a lot of faith in that, when I think that is so important. Mm. I deal with children, and they haven't built up a facade yet. They don't know how to articulate to mommy or daddy that they may not like the teacher, or they may like the teacher, but they can tell if they do or not. Mm. And I can tell. That's something I put a lot of faith in. When I deal with people, I deal with how they vibrate.
Well, that's a perfect example of watching someone's actions and having that be very telling, right? So if you're wondering if your child likes the teacher, right? Do they go up and try to embrace them?
Right.
Do they say goodbye on their own? Are they, how are they interacting?
Right.
Are they running away when school's over? You know, not that that means anything definitive,
but you can
just get clues sometimes from behaviors such as these.
That's true.
So
that's
it is important to take notice.
The thing I want to ask you, Chelsea, so how would you sum up your trip here if you were actually to say you had to go in a year?
An adventure.
An adventure. Is it one that you want to do again?
Absolutely. I love adventures. I love challenges.
Is this your first time living outside of the United States?
It is.
Okay. Have you been anywhere else outside of the United States?
I have, just for shorter trips, vacations, not. Okay.
In Europe?
Not this length of time.
Mm-hmm. You went to Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where most people tend to go.
Yes.
But now Asia's a big deal.
It is.
It's a big thing. Everybody wants to come here and see what it's like.
It is. Well,
Chelsea, before I end this podcast, is there anything else that you want to say? You want to tell me about your books? Do you have one that just came out or anything?
Oh, The Art of Investigation Revisited is okay. Our latest effort. Mine and my co-editor, okay. Bruce Sackman. Yes, we've developed this. Well, it's now a series, and it's really exciting.
How many do you have in your series so far?
Well, so we have two, and we're working on the third right now. Yes, yes. These are all in the investigative genre.
Okay.
And what we've done is of the first two, the focus is the soft skills of investigators. So think professionalism, skepticism, energy. And we've asked investigators, about 15 in each series, to come and talk to us about their experiences investigating in all different genres.
Okay.
You name it. We have cyber investigators, we have crime scene investigators, everything in between. And but the process is still the same, as it goes back to the research aspect that we're talking about, right? You're researching different things, of course, different subject matters, but it comes back to a lot of basics
that are common with all of them.
Right, and that's okay. Where the soft skills come in, right? I'd like to use energy as an example because I wrote my chapter on that, of course. But it's one where, if you think about it, right, it applies to every single investigation you could ever have. When do you have a case where it was bad that you had energy? You always exert a lot of energy, but you don't maybe think about how your level of energy really affects the outcome. Right? It will facilitate you looking in more directions, perhaps, that you're not, let's say, giving up or deciding that you're done in a case. You're continuing to go, you're continuing on. And that can be important because there are cases where they've been pending for decades. Right? Think about for instance, a cold case, right? Where you're looking for a missing person and it's been since 1974 and where is that person, right? It takes a lot of energy to continue a case like that for so many years, right? To keep picking up the pieces again. Those kind of cases are transferred through multiple investigators over the years. Every time that new person gets that file, there's a new opportunity, right? They also are losing some of that experience, of course, in that matter, but there's a new opportunity to add more energy to that case and see what you could find. And there's always hope that way. Anyway, it gives an example of how energy comes into play. And so we ask investigators to take us through those times and tell us those stories. And what we really do love about that is, even though you have someone talking about a missing person's case, you could be working in a business environment and still have takeaways from that. Still think about more about your energy and how you're using it, and are you applying it in your line of work? And so that's what we love about it. So we have two books now with that focus. And of course, people that are interested in traditional investigations are not going to be disappointed either, because they're going to get a lot of tips from this. So it's very good for your new incoming people to learn, and also just entertaining for someone in any field that would get something out of that, right? Like, my dad's reading it now and said, oh, this is really interesting. He was not in this field whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so he's getting something out of it too. So, but that's the series. And the next one that we're working on is for the same publisher, CRC Press, top academic publisher. And what we're looking at next is we're examining in a little bit different of a way, right, but similar focus on investigations itself. But now we're looking at different industries and the process of investigation in all of these industries, right? Because if you think about it, the process is, even though it's the same job per se, right, so you're an investigator in the financial industry, your job is very different than an investigator in an aviation industry, right? Of course, so many things are going to be similar, but so many things are going to be different. And there's such an art, right? Because that's the titles of our series, of The Art of Investigation. There's an art to that. there's such an art. Having worked in a particular industry, investigating for many years, you have such a breadth of knowledge that simply can't be replaced. And you almost become such an expert in that area that you can't work somewhere else. If you think about it, even if you're, if let's say you're 25 years crime scene investigator, is it likely that you would then become, using the same example, an aviation investigator? Probably not, because they would say, we'd prefer someone that has expertise. And you the same, right? That's not your first area of expertise. So you developed this really interesting area of endeavor. And because of that, there's such a little bit of a art, if you will, and a science around that area that maybe no one else knows, because you've personally developed that and that other person has not. And I think because we become so specialized, there's a lot to learn. And so if you have a case that deals with another area, if you're more of a generalist, you don't really have a lot of resources for that. And so I think that this is going to be perfect, because it doesn't exist right now in the current literature. And now we'll have a place to go to learn about the process of investigation in all these different areas, industries, if you will. So it's really exciting. We're recruiting now for the effort. We're going to have probably between 40 and 50, we're looking at now, different industries that we're going to examine.
To
and
have
we're
people
looking,
come in to talk.
Yeah. We're looking for specialists in those areas. So people that have conducted investigations in those areas for a while, right, to tell us their story.
And not knowing that they were actually conducting investigations. They were doing their job, and they didn't look at it the way that you're going to explain to
potentially,
them. That's interesting.
Potentially.
Because when you said that, I was thinking, and when you said in the aero industry, it could have been food industry. It doesn't matter.
The food industry. We're looking for that.
See, I know.
Yes, we're looking
matter.
For like, that.
And then Esau in the teaching industry, because I teach kids, you know, I saw how you could apply what you do to everything. So you're not trying to make people go out and get their PhD in this field. You're saying this is a tool that you can use every single day.
Yes.
And you're probably already using it, you just don't call it investigating.
Right. That's right.
That's interesting.
That's right.
That is so nice.
That's right.
Listen, do you have it in this library here? Do you have it? Is it on Audible?
That's pending.
Okay,
we're working on that.
I'm big into Audible books, and you have to do that soon, because I like
it. It's on the publisher's website, okay. CRC Press. Okay. It's on Amazon. We're out yeah. there, but we're working on these additional
to.
Avenues.
Yes. You have to. Chelsea, before I end the podcast, I always like to ask this question. If you could go back in time and meet the younger Chelsea, mm-hmm. and give her advice based upon what you know now, how old would she be, and what advice would you give her?
I would say probably the younger the better, right? But maybe not too young, so that I was sure to remember it, right? So okay. Let's say 15.
Okay. Right.
And to say, things are going to get interesting, they're going to be amazing, keep up the good work.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Keep going.
That is beautiful.
Keep going.
I think that's the one thing that most people don't realize is the difference between success and failure. It's only a failure if you give up. Thank you so much, Chelsea.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And never forget, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.